Hello and welcome to another episode of the Racing's Post, the front page. You're joining me, James Stevens, Racing Post journalist and West Country correspondent, to look back on the last week of news and all the big action from the racecourse. Pleasure to be joined here in the studio by Racing Post journalist Maddie Player. We'll start with you, Maddie. All well, looking forward to the week ahead and Cheltenham races, which you're at on the weekend.
Yeah, all 3 days at Cheltenham should be great. Still a little bit croaky, James, but getting there, so need to be in peak fitness for good action this weekend.
Perfect. And Jonathan, you've had a Jonathan Harding, specialist writer of the year, should we say. You've got some affordability stories lined up for us.
I certainly do.
Been away for a week, ready for another week?
Yeah, I'm fully caught up now, well rested and ready to go.
Good. Okay, without further ado, let's go into it. But before we do, let me tell you about a new Members Club offer, which you should certainly check out. Okay, and the first item is, of course, some brilliant jumps racing we've had on the track. The jumps is back. Brilliant racing, whether it's West Country weekend, of course, a little biased here, or indeed some fantastic action in Ireland. And it was to Northern Ireland and Down Royal where we saw the pick of it. The return of Jerry Colomb, described as the new Gold Cup hope, running in the Champion Chase. He won only just, but it was an impressive performance. He's now 4-1 for the Cheltenham Gold Cup. Can Galop Under Champ be beaten? Is this the horse to do it? He could well be. But perhaps most interestingly was the results in which Gordon Elliott trained 11 out of the 14 winners. It comes after a fantastic column from Lewis Porteous on Tuesday spoke about whether British racing was in fact in a more healthy position than Irish racing. Surprising perhaps considering the studio we've discussed in the past, the Irish rampant results at the Cheltenham Festival. But perhaps it is Ireland who are perhaps in a worse state than Britain because of the dominance of course, Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott. So we'll look at that. And of course, it comes as well after the entries for the Grade 1 Morgiana Hurdle. 9 of them, 5 for Willie, 4 for Gordon. Not so good. And of course, Alaho, who we saw this week make a winning return, took on only 2 rivals in the Clonmel All Shows, one of which, and the main contender of which, from his stablemate. So there's lots to unpack. Maddie, the first question really is that it's a bold statement, isn't it? We've seen the top Irish horses are from Ireland, the top horses are from Ireland. Is it more unhealthy because of this dominance of 2 races? And is the sport suffering because of it?
I don't know whether necessarily it's more unhealthy, but that sort of dominance in so few hands is clearly unhealthy. By definition, you want racing to be a competitive sport, you know, produces a good spectacle. We saw that at Down Royal, even though there was only the 4 runners. But also in Ireland, I understand there is the strength and depth, primarily with Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott. Willie, for instance, didn't really launch much of a challenge at Down Royal. He'll be saving his runners for elsewhere. But I do at the same time think that there are some emerging trainers in Ireland. The likes of Gavin Cromwell is doing phenomenally well, had another Royal Ascot winner this year on the flat, but of course is more well known for his jumps exploits. The likes of John McConnell, etc. Yeah. They might not necessarily be able to compete when we get into the big spring meetings with some of their big guns, but they're getting a better quality of horse. So I think those are the sort of people we should be looking at when it comes to challenging the likes of Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you have the dominance that the likes of Willie had and some of the numbers that we looked into back in the spring in those Grade 1s, he can just reshuffle his pack. And if these horses were in different hands, then they would race against each other more often. So I don't think it's too bold a statement. I don't think you can really disagree with it. But I do think that we could see change upon the horizon just naturally by other trainers innovating, doing things slightly differently and ultimately getting the results, which we have seen.
Yeah, and you mentioned Gavin Cromwell there. 3 winners at Cheltenham in the October meeting, which is more than any other trainer. So it's a sign, and Lewis sort of points to us that the bigger Irish trainers are still winning big races, but that sort of that mid-tier, that next level down, they're sort of thinking a bit differently and targeting the Cheltenham meeting and doing it with all due respect, doing very, very well. there was another point, Jonathan, we'll come to you on this. Willie Mullins only had two runners at Down Royal. Mm. So there is an argument that you could say, well, he's not really turned up and it's not good for Irish racing. But in the balance of fairness, it was the 2 days at Exeter and Wincanton, which is Paul Nicholls' big stomping ground. He had six winners. There were no Nicky Henson runners there. So you could argue that, is it just a case of Irish racing's becoming predictable, or trainers just have their habits and they're finding good opportunities?
I think there's probably a little bit of both. And certainly with the Irish angle there, I think it depends on how you measure the health of the sport, whether it's competitiveness or whether it's in terms of quality, because Irish racing certainly feels to me anyway, and we've seen that with Willie Mullins not being there and Gordon Elliott sort of picking up where he hasn't got involved, that it's more top heavy perhaps than British racing, in the sense that they have the best horses, as we've seen, certainly with their results over here, but it also is very geared towards the top 2 yards, whereas I'd say if your metric for health is not the quality of the horse but competitiveness, then I think that would put British racing slightly ahead at the moment, in that the horses are spread around a greater variety of yards. But it's certainly an interesting one. The big question that we sort of often skirt around, I think, is, well, what do we do about it?
Or are we just punishing success?
Yeah, and I think that's, if you are to introduce any measures to level the playing field, it would have to be very carefully thought out, because you don't want to necessarily curb power for the sake of curbing it and, as you put it, punishing success. I think any measure or any measures that would be brought in, any initiatives to make it more competitive, would have to be geared towards raising the overall standard and offering opportunities for the trainers who don't necessarily have the same numbers and the same opportunities.
I think as well, if you look at other sports, James, there is almost slightly an inevitability about certain teams or people being dominant for long periods of time. This is not a problem exclusive to racing. That doesn't mean we can't look at it and try and innovate and you know, create a healthier sport. We definitely should be doing that. But at the same time, perhaps let's you know, keep our feet on the ground and realise that this is a problem that lots of industries have.
Yeah, we're only at the start of the season as well, and lots could change. Whether Jerry Colon will be a Gold Cup champion is the question. Touched on there at the start about how impressive he was. Looked to be outpaced at one stage, made a bit of a mistake early on, but came back, recovered and won really well, stayed really well. Is he a Gold Cup winner to you, Maddie?
Could be. Very easily could be.
That's not an answer.
He's not the sort of horse who I'd want to back at this stage, okay, at about 4-1, but that's just because that's not my style of punting. But I certainly think he's got all the credentials that you need, and certainly the extended distance that the Gold Cup offers would surely suit him. And I think it was an excellent performance, but also just an excellent race in the Down Royal Champion Chase over the weekend. You don't often get to see that sort of spectacle in those sorts of conditions that early on in the season, and it really was fantastic. I think he did well. Jack Kennedy said afterwards that, you know, everything went wrong for him, really. He conflated jumping out to his left, and then Jerry Colom had to switch, and he said he overjumped the last by a long way. This is a horse who has only been beaten once by my beloved The Real Whacker at Cheltenham last year, who we're going to see on Saturday, of course. He just seems to get the job done, and that's what you need in a racehorse. You know, you need a horse who's going to be able to deliver when conditions aren't necessarily in their favour. The interesting thing for me, maybe it's because I'm slightly romantic and find it quite interesting, is that Gordon Elliott all the way along has, you know, due to this horse's reputation and his brilliant record, has seen him compare him to his 2016 winner, Gold Cup winner, Don Cossack. And I do think there are some similarities between the pair. So I think that'd be fascinating to see. We don't often see those sort of little notes and storylines and hype be delivered. So Jerry Colom, he's on the right path for now, but he's going to face bigger targets to come. I was surprised by anything, how strong he was in the market to defeat a field of that calibre, but he
a race fit Cheltenham Festival and MVLN.
Well, all of them had had a race and he hadn't as well, so there's going to be improvement in him. It's exciting for the season to come. It's a shame we're not going to see him that much. I think he might just have one more run. Don't necessarily think that King George would be the race for him, just because he could get a little bit outpaced. And still, again, there's elements of Don Cossack there. He came down, didn't he, when in with a big chance. So look forward to tracing the rest of his career. And that brand advisory form's worked out really well with the Irish Grand National winner, Iron Maximus, in behind. And We'll see this weekend how it pans out.
You're liking that form because I have a real whacker in you, I can tell. look back to some of the action close to home. Stairway Faye, remarkably similar sort of run, actually, in the novice chase at Exeter on Friday. He looked outpaced and came back to win really well. Lovely jumping performance, was impressive. And he looked a picture in the paddock as well. I went to go and see him. Really, really impressed. He heads to Sandown next, and he'll go to the Corso Start novices chase on Boxing Day. That's the plan for him. And Paul Nicholls, he was asked the question. We had a couple of quotes in, and they said the quotes was coming. Well, he had actually been cut for the National Hunt chase because of how well he finished. And the Brown Advisory quote, 10-1, had stayed the same. So we put the question to Paul Nicholls, and absolutely, like, you know what he's like sometimes. Nope, he's too classy. Be the 3 miler all the way. So good to see that. Other highlights, Elixir de Nuts winning the Holden Gold Cup. Great for the Tizard family. Colin Tizard said to me after the race, he never sees his son cry, but he did on Saturday, did on Friday with grandson Freddie, or Joe's nephew Freddie, in the play. And finally, Philema in France. Very impressive winner. Now 6-1 for the Stayers. So,
just on that, I wonder whether, because the Stayers is quite an open division this year.
It's We've been saying
it the last couple of seasons. Whether after Sir Gerhard came down over fences, whether they could revert to the Stayers for him. I think he's about 20-1.
Yeah.
That could be quite interesting.
It's a strange market because there's a lots of, it's almost like who's going to fail in their novice chase season and end up there. It's the most horrible market from an anti-post perspective. But one thing's for sure, he's owned by British owners, this French trained horse. Really impressive winner in France. So one to watch there. If you are having a considering a bet on the 2024 Cheltenham Festival, indeed a bet ahead of the week ahead, do make sure to check out some of the content in this week's Safer Gambling. Hugely lots of content about this week, so do make sure to check that out. And Jonathan, we'll come to you on this. It's a big week for the sport, isn't it? Just to shed a light on what's available and look forward to that.
No, absolutely. It's a hugely important week to recognise Safer Gambling, because it's very easily done. I think it's, you know, as people who like to have a bet, you can see how that might potentially get out of hand, or it might become unsustainable. So it's an important week to just check in on people around you who like to have a bet, check in with your own habits, why are you placing a bet, and just have a think before you do. And like you say, lots of material out there for anyone who would like to check it out.
Yeah, good stuff to read, regardless of your situation. And the final thought we'll have just from the weekend's racing is with Graham Lee, who suffered a horrendous fall at Newcastle on Friday night. As far as we're still aware here on Monday morning, he's still in intensive care. Everybody at the Racing Post wishing him all the very best. Okay, on to number two, Jonathan. You've been away in Devon, and all you've been thinking about is affordability, right, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, after weeks of covering it, I spend most of my week off studying it as well. So a few developments this week. Most notably, I think, with Nick Rust on Tuesday, former BHA chief executive, has been named as the chair of the Gambling Commission's new industry forum. Now, you'll know from our coverage that one of the sort of criticisms levelled at the Gambling Commission, I think fairly, is that it doesn't have quite the sort of betting expertise in its ranks that you might hope for.
And criticism from Nick Rust himself.
From Nick Rust himself, quite right. And Nick Rust certainly does have plenty of gambling expertise, 25 years in the industry, in very senior positions. So it's great to have somebody with his knowledge of betting and indeed racing, now having a direct line to the commission. It makes sense to me that a regulator would have sort of first person insight of the industry that it regulates. It appointed a number of new commissioners recently, and they didn't necessarily have the gambling experience that people would perhaps hope for within racing. So for this body to have been set up and to be chaired by somebody like Nick Rust is very positive. As indeed is the news that the affordability petition is getting ever closer to 100,000. I think before we came in here, it was 82,500, which is great support for that. Hugely important, and has been backed by a lot of people in racing.
Yeah, and just on Nick Rust, it's an interesting appointment, because I suppose one of the overwhelming sort of stories about the affordability is the lack of faith in the Gambling Commission and the sort of lack of understanding they have for the sport and the sport's problems. I mean, this seems like a positive step in bringing the two together, albeit we don't want to get ahead of ourselves quite yet.
No, of course, and there's an awful lot of water that's going to pass under the bridge before we see the proposals in the white paper in any shape or form.
But we're at a stage now where the Gambling Commission's had its consultation. Affordability checks are obviously the big headline proposal of many included in the government's white paper. There is a lot of to-ing and fro-ing and working out how this is going to work. And I, for one, feel a lot more comfortable knowing that you're going to have this new forum that's going to be able to have a say and put forward views that perhaps might not have necessarily been considered.
Yeah, and just on the petition, we will continue to advise you to sign the petition. There's so many reasons why. And just as the card at Fakenham says today on Monday, save our sport handicap hurdles. So there's real momentum behind this petition. Do go and sign it. It's incredibly important in keeping the sport that we love. We had Nevin Truesdale at Wincanton was on the mic and discussed to punters why they should sign it. Similar calls at at Newbury and Ludlow this week. There's been calls. Maddie, Jonathan, we'll come to you, Maddie. It's for the people watching who've followed this affordability story, summarise why so important this petition is and that we can get over the 100,000 mark.
Well, I think, listen, we've been speaking about it on this show for months and months and in our paper, beyond even that, about how important betting is to our sport, and, you know, it's inextricably linked, and how these potentially these intrusive affordability checks can be potentially incredibly damaging to our sport. You know, we're talking about loss of a huge amount of money, and the sport is undoubtedly going to suffer if they come in their proposed forms. So this is something that really needs to be discussed and brought to light. I think, if just circling back to the Nick Rust thing, we spoke about Nick and what a sort of knowledgeable and passionate person he is a couple of weeks ago on this podcast after he spoke out at a conference talking about what racing needed to do to thrive and to secure its future. So great that we have someone like Nick now in a position where he's able to bestow his knowledge and his passion. That's just an example of, you know, the sort of people that racing attracts and you know, how much joy it can bring to so many people. So signing this petition is obviously very integral.
Yeah, and Jonathan, I mean, this is such a huge moment for the sport, isn't it? We're the 18,000 or 17,500, you checked later than I did, is massive, not just for the people that work in racing, but for punters too, isn't it? Because it's their hobby, it's something they really enjoy. It's massive that this gets over and gets debated and the right decision and the sensible decision is made.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's another avenue through which racing can put forward its case of really just to spell out the potential damage of these checks in their current form or in the form that they've been mooted so far. But also just to get across that sort of, I think, just the general strength of feeling about being asked to prove you can afford to bet. I mean, I think this goes beyond, we've spoken at great length about the impact on British racing's finances on punters, but I think we're straying into just civil liberties full stop. And I think everybody would quite rightly, and we've just discussed safer gambling, we would like to see problem gambling dealt with effectively and in a targeted way. The problem here is it's trying to crack a nut with a sledgehammer, and it's trying to apply something perhaps far too broad to what is an important issue, but one that could be, I think, handled in a much more effective way that doesn't impact quite so many people.
Yeah, well said. And if you do want to sign the petition, it will be available all week on the Racing Post website. Okay, story number three, and it's to you, Maddie. And we've got some positive news on the whip.
I was going to say, this is good news. I think we can all agree. Anyway, on Wednesday, our colleague Peter Scargill wrote a story about how the whip offences have been at their lowest level since the introduction of the new rules, of course. Last month, down to just 0.5% of rides were in breach of these new rules. And if you go all the way back to October 29th, including that date, there's been 35 punishable offences from 6,935 rides. Overall offending rate since they were introduced 0.82%. And Pete spoke to Dale Gibson of the PJA just to talk about how these regulations have gone down effectively. And he said how you know, there is still work that needs to be done in terms of amateur and apprentice riders, conditional riders, just getting them to adapt their style, and also to jockeys with foreign licences who were coming over and riding in within this framework. But Dale also had praise for several things, changes within the rules, the implementation of the mitigation, which was introduced in the summer. That's been a real help, as well as the scrapping of the backhand stipulation. We'll remember we were speaking about that a lot, and how jockeys really had to adapt their style. That's been a benefit to many, even anecdotally from speaking to jockeys on course. And also they've reconsidered the definition of above shoulder height, which was another one which I think quite a few jockeys were finding difficult to manage. And also the reduction of up to 50% of the suspension for one strike if they went over, for 200 and above rides on the flat and 150 rides over jumps if they hadn't had a transgression prior to that. So yeah, I think we can reflect on this really positively. You know, inevitably when there is a significant rule change and one that is going to affect all of the jockey population, it's going to be controversial. It certainly was. We spoke about it a lot in the summer and more towards the start of the year. But I think a lot of that noise has quieted down now. There's been some changes that were really considered, and it seems that all parties are a lot happier. As Dale touched upon, you know, these things can always be improved, but the communication between the jockeys and the BHA seems to have come a long way and seems to have reached a very reasonable conclusion. I don't know about you two, whether you've been on track and heard much about it, but I haven't heard many jockeys complaining too much about the whip rules these days. So to me, that's a good thing. Whether you believe in, you know, why they're there or what have you is a different issue, really. But the fact that the jockeys are listening and have adapted their riding styles really is great news, and shows that, I guess, racing can make changes and it can modernise, if you will, for, you know, and it will be effective. And I think that's a really positive thing when we're talking about our sport. You know, you can't stay too much in the past. You do have to adapt. And as much as we don't want to let go of our heritage and we don't want to, you know, appease people who frankly don't know much about racing or never wish to and won't educate themselves, at the same time, you know, the sport isn't the same sport that it was, you know, 10, 20 years ago,
the world around racing
has
changed.
Exactly. Yeah. So the fact that we can move, we can change, and we can, you know, it's not often a smooth journey when it comes to dealing with all these different groups. So the closer we can get to, you know, collaboration and communication between these different groups is a good thing. So, yeah, I think it's great news, really.
Yeah, there is one point that we'll have to pick up. So we've got the best way to measure the use of a whip would be the offence rate, which has dropped from 1.93% in February to 0.5% in October. So that's by far the best. But one of those was Frankie Dettori's 16-day winning ride on Trawlerman at Champions Day. Now, there was a mentality that was questioned, which was the win-at-all-costs ride. Now, this is Champions Day. Frankie Dettori, as we know, will not be riding in Britain anymore. In fact, This last week we found out he's going to be on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, which would be pretty interesting. See how he gets on there. But this win-at-all-cost mentality is still a problem, because we're going to come to a point in the season where we've got big races like the King George, the Welsh Grand National, Long Walk, where jockeys perhaps could afford in the big races to win at all costs in a King George and miss the midweek of January. It's not going to affect them too much. Is this still a problem, do you think?
I don't think so. Or it could be. We'll have to wait and see. But I don't think it has to be. When you're talking about an elite sport at the very highest level, you kind of almost have to have that mentality, I suppose, because you want to do everything you can to win. But you can also do that while factoring in your limitations. And that's something that we've seen done effectively in many, many, many races, including at the highest level. As you say, in Frankie Dettori's case, I guess there were slightly mitigating circumstances. Not saying that came into his mind when he broke the rules. I'm sure it didn't.
And, of course, the ban was more because it wasn't a big race.
Yeah, exactly.
That's worth
we see them,
pointing out as well.
Those bans get elevated due to them being in big races. But yeah, ultimately, if you break the rules, then you should have to have the punishment. I think jockeys have already showcased how well they've adapted. And although we will see more evidence in the next coming months, I see no reason why they can't continue to do well even in the big races.
Yeah.
I mean, forgive me if I miss this while I have my feet up, but with this offence rate, I would be very interested to see that broken down by race class, similarly to by the by the type of license held. I would like to know whether the offence rate has dropped in those, certainly during the flat season, where we have a full body of data in the group ones, group twos, and whether there is a correlation between offences in big races relative to, because I would be guessing without the data, I think.
Yeah, I think the interesting angle of it, and I think the area which Maddie touched on that will be addressed, will be apprentice conditionals, jockeys and foreigners. I think that's possibly the target point that was outlined by Dale Gibson, that they want to, that's the point they want to improve on. I think.
And that, I know we saw that, didn't we, in the first couple of months. That was an area where there was definitely room for improvement.
Mm.
I think certainly with the, I'm still not entirely convinced the punishment fits the crime sometimes with those really lengthy tossing up bans, and I think that those aren't a particularly good look. I understand the need for a deterrent, and I suppose the BHA would point to this data and say, well, look, because the deterrent is so serious, so severe, this is happening. But I still think if we are going to be targeting those younger riders in particular, I'm not sure massive bans or, you know, whether there could be not amnesty, but whether that will be taken into consideration.
I think that's helped by the final thing I mentioned earlier, sort of bullet points, saying that, you know, there was a reduction of up to 50% in those bans if they hadn't broken the rules within the certain threshold. I think things like that really help, as well as the sort of mitigation and a little bit more of perhaps common sense almost applied with the above shoulder height, etc., etc.
It's great to see that the evidence is being put out there, though, is publicly available and is being used. It's not adapting the rules for the sake of adapting the rules. It's actually very evidence and data driven, which is refreshing.
It is. A positive note to end that story on, and it comes to me to decide what makes the front page. Good news about the whip. I think that's a good story. As I think the good story was all the fantastic weekend action, but I think there is a huge picture at stake, and I think we have to put the petition and Nick Rust on the front page this week. For me, the petition is the big talking point. Hopefully that inspires a few of you at home to sit down and sign the petition. It only takes a couple of minutes. A huge moment for British horse racing. This petition is absolutely massive. It's a sensible thing to do, so if you do have a couple of minutes, we'd certainly urge you to sign the petition. And that just lets me thank you both for your advice this afternoon. And fantastic week at Cheltenham to come up. Maddie, you're there. Is there anything in particular you're looking forward to that our viewers at home can get stuck into?
Oh, James, you put me on the spot.
The real whacker.
I love the real whacker, but I'm not necessarily sure he's going to win. I tell you what, if Hansard backs up in the Great Wood Hurdle, running, I pestered you to see if you got hold of Gary Moore at Wincanton, which you didn't, but I'm led to believe they're still going to go. I thought that was the perfect prep in the Elite Hurdle. I really fancy him. I think he's around 12-1. Hopefully he'll make it there. That'll be good.
Yeah, okay. Well, you've just thrown me under the bus with a minute to go in the front page. Thank you very much. It's been Jonathan Harding and Maddie Player, myself, James Stevens. Join us next week for an episode of the Front Page.